listening to realclearduff.com.
We're on Kuf Yud Testament Aleph, the last daf of Bava Kamma. The second line by the two dots where it says, Rav Zovin. The halacha is that if a person has a reason to suspect that an item he wants to purchase is stolen, the halacha is he cannot buy it. Therefore, our Mishnah presented several examples of different professions where there is a specific concern that people of this profession or trade engage in theft, and that therefore one must be wary that perhaps he's being sold this stolen item. Now, it's not to say that person can't purchase anything of person of that profession, for if he's selling something where it's highly unlikely that he would attempt to steal such a thing, if he likely wouldn't get away with it, and then it's fine, for the chances that he stole it are remote. And one of the cases our Mishnah taught us was that a person may not purchase wood or fruit from Shomrei Peiros, people hired to watch the orchards of others, and there is a suspicion that during that job they steal some of the fruit or wood, which they then try to sell, so you can't purchase that from them. The Gemara begins today by relating how Rav, or they change it to Rava, Zavin Shebishta Me'arisa, he went ahead and purchased some grapevine branches from an oris, from a sharecropper. So Amale Abaye, Abaye said to Rava, how could you do this? Our Mishnah taught us, Velo Mishomrei Peiros, Eitzim Uperos, you're not allowed to buy wood from somebody who works for a field owner, watches his field. The aris is also hired to work in the field. So don't we have to suspect that maybe he stole these branches? So how could you go ahead and purchase them? Amale, Rava responded, that halacha doesn't apply in this case. For Hani Mili Bishomer, the Mishnah's ruling applies to a watchman, the Lesli Begufa the Aramidi, who has no stake in the field itself whatsoever. He's merely an employee. He's watching the field. So there, we have to be concerned. You know, how did he get this wood or fruit? There was a significant chance that he stole it from the field he was watching. Of Aris, in this case, of an Aris, a sharecropper, the Isle Begave, who rightfully claims a percentage of the field, that's the whole arrangement of a sharecropper. He works the land and takes a percentage of the yield. Therefore, you don't have to assume it's stolen. We can assume simply that this product he's selling comes from his portion of the field. So therefore, not a problem in this case. Gemara continues with a brisa, Tan Rabbanim. Rabbanim taught a brisa, Shomrei Peiros Lokhen Mehen. You're allowed to buy from watchmen of fruit orchards, Kishahin Yoshvin Umochrin, if they're sitting and selling their wares out in the open. Salin Lifneim, Vitrutani Lifneim. They have a whole stand set up over there with the fruit baskets and the scales all set up for business. For the assumption is that the watchmen would not steal the fruit and sell it right out in the open. Therefore, you're allowed to purchase in this case. The Braisa adds, though, V'kulan she'amru hatmein. In any case, however, where the seller urges the buyer to hide his purchase, and that raises a red flag, and usher, in that case, you can't buy from. Why is he saying to hide it? Must be stole it. So there would be a problem. The Braisa continues, in the same vein, lokhin mehen mepesa chagina. If they're selling the stuff by the entrance to the garden, then fine, it's out in the open, avalo me'achore agina. Not if they're selling it at the back of the garden, that's not in the public view, and therefore it could be that they're operating an illegal business here, selling stolen goods. The Gemara continues, Itmar was stated, Gazlan me'emas mutter liknos himenu. In what situation would you be permitted to purchase something from a known robber? Does the halacha say that you're never allowed to buy anything from somebody who's known as a robber? The Gemara says, no, Rav Amar. Rav says, Achitehe Rov Mishalo. If you know that most of this person's belongings actually belong to him, they're not stolen, then it's fine, you can purchase something from him. You don't have to assume that this particular thing was stolen. Shmuel Amar, Shmuel says, Afilu Miot Shalo. If you know that even just a minority of his things actually belong to him, then that's good enough, and you're allowed to assume that this particular item you're buying is from the possessions that rightfully belong to him. And in other words, this whole case is different from the cases we've been discussing for until now. We've been discussing items where we have a specific concern about this type of merchandise. Maybe this person stole it given his situation, his trade. As opposed to where the issue is, we know this person has a tendency to steal. We have no knowledge about the particular item he is selling. There, according to Shmuel, as long as you know that some of his possessions really belong to him, you're allowed to assume that this item he's selling is one of those possessions, so it's fine. Gemara says, Ori layer of Yehuda la'ada dayala kedivrei ha'omer filu miyot shelo. Rav Yehuda ruled and practiced for Ada, who was shamish of the Rabbanim, like Shmuel, that even if you only know that a minority of the Ganav sayings belong to him, that's a sufficient enough basis to be lenient. The Gemara now discusses Mamun Masur, the property of a Masur, or the Gemara also calls him a Moser, an informant, which means a person who goes around informing the government about people's properties, telling them, you know, interesting properties that they should seize. And as we saw back in Kuf Yud Zayin, the situation was, once these corrupt officials would be notified about somebody's property, they would do anything, even kill that person to steal his property. Therefore, the Gemara said, a Moser is classified as a halachic rodef, a pursuer, that is, he's threatening someone else's life, and therefore the halacha says we should get up and kill that person before he has more people killed. So the Gemara has a very interesting discussion about Mamun Masur. What is the halachic status of the property of a Masur, who again is liable to be killed? Rav Huna of Rav Yehuda discussed this question. Chad amar mutter la'abdo biyad. One of these chachamim said that it's permitted to actively destroy the Moser's property. Chad amar osu la'abdo biyad. The other opinion said, no, it's prohibited to actively destroy Moser's property. The Gemara elaborates on each opinion. Madi amar mutter la'abdo biyad. The argument of the opinion that you're allowed to actively destroy the Moser's property is simply lo yehi mamono chamor migufo. It's not logical to be more stringent regarding the Moser's property than his very life. And so if his life is forfeit, then certainly his mamon is forfeit. You destroy it biyad. Whereas Umadiyam Rosulab, the other opinion, argues that even though the halacha says the Moser is to be killed, however, you don't destroy his property. Why not? Dilma have le zara me'alya. Maybe he'll have upstanding descendants, Yorshim unherdim, uksiv. And the pasuk in Iyov says, Yachin Rasha v'tzadik yilbash. The actual pasuk does not include the word Rasha, but Gemara is like explaining the pasuk. The subject of the pasuk is a Rasha, wicked person. And the pasuk is saying that Yachin, the wicked one, prepares, he amasses wealth, v'tzadik yilbash. And the tzadik, the righteous one, ends up wearing or obtaining that wealth. So meaning, let's not destroy the Moser's property, but perhaps we'll have a righteous descendant who will be yorish that property, and that would be a fine thing. The Gemara brings a related story of Chista Havile Yahua Risa. Chista once had a sharecropper, the Havi Takil V'yayiv Takil V'shakil, who in dividing the shares of the crop would measure so precisely his portion that it amounted to inappropriate kind of practice. Person not supposed to be so miserly and so exactly demanding of his portion. Or Rashi suggests could be he demanded more than the typical share that an Oris is entitled to. Or some understand that this Oris actually stole from Rav Chista. He was dishonest in the measurements. Either way, when Rav Chista saw this problem, Salke, he fired the Oris. And once he had been fired, Kara Nafshe Chista applied the pasuk in Mishlei to himself that says, "Vitzafun latzadik chel chote." The wealth of the sinner is stored away, is hidden away for the tzaddik, just as happened over here, where the Tsarist was acting like a Rasha, which warranted that he be let go. Once he was fired, Chista got his portion. So it exemplified how one's wicked behavior resulted in the righteous person inheriting the wicked person's wealth. The Gemara now darshens the pasuk in Iyov that talks about robbers. Says the pasuk in Iyov, Ki ma tikvas chanef. What is the hope of a flatterer? Ki yiftza. When he steals, ki yeshel eloka nafsho. God will cast away his soul. So the Gemara brings a dispute regarding this pasuk. Rav Huna and Rav Chista discuss the question Of whose soul we're referring to here? Chad amar nafsho de nigzal. One said, and it's referring to the soul of the one who was stolen from, the victim. Chad amar nafsho shel gazlan. The other opinion said, it's referring to the soul of the robber. His soul is being taken away. The Gemara elaborates on each opinion. Mandi amar nafsho shel nigzal. The opinion that says it's referring to the victim's soul, his basis is dechsiv. The pasuk in Mishle says, "Kein orchos kol botzea botza es nefesh bi'alav yikach." These are the ways of somebody who steals. The nature of such a crime is that he is taking the victim's soul. It's like murdering this person. So this opinion argues that's what Iyov means too. He says, "Yeshel lo kanafsho." It means that by stealing, you're taking this person's soul. It's like you're murdering him. Whereas, Ma'ad Yomar Nafsho Shel Gazlan. The other opinion says, no, it's referring to the robber's soul, the Chsiv. For you have a different pasuk in Mishle, which says, Al Tigzal Dal Ki Dalhu. Do not rob an impoverished person, for he is impoverished. V'al Tedake Oni V'Shar. Do not oppress the poor in the gate. And Rashi explains, how can you steal from someone who's totally impoverished? He already has nothing. The answer is, it means that the person withholds the required matnos aniyam, different portions, ma'isirani, leket shechepeya, that must be given to the poor. And the pasuk is saying, do not steal from the ani by withholding these things, which are normally distributed by the gate. And the pasuk continues, ki Hashem yoriv rivom, for God will fight their fight, v'kove es koveyem nafesh, and rob the soul of the one who robbed them. So the pasuk is saying, somebody who steals is chayv misa, it warrants a death penalty from heaven. So that's what the pasuk in Iyov meant as well. The chanav has no hope, because yesh lo kanafsho, God will take away his soul for this crime of stealing. The Gemara asks, v'idach nami, the other opinion, this opinion we just discussed, who suggested that Iyov means that the gazlan's soul will be taken away, but he also has to deal with, that Haksiv, the pasuk in Mishle, says, nefesh b'yalav yikach. This pasuk indicates that the soul of the victim is taken away by the robber. So what does this opinion do with that pasuk? Gemara answers, my b'yalav, b'yalav dahashto. Really, that pasuk in Mishle as well refers to the robber's soul. In other words, by stealing, he takes away the owner's soul. Who's the owner? The robber himself. By stealing, he's taking away his own soul. It's like suicide. For by stealing, a person becomes liable to the death penalty. And the Gemara asks, V'idach nami. The other opinion, who explains the pasuk in Iyov as referring to the nefesh of the victim, Ayoksiv v'koves koveyam nefesh. What does he do with this pasuk in Mishle, which seems to say that the result of stealing is that God will rob the robber's soul? The Gemara answers that this opinion will read that pasuk to be saying like this. It's matam kamar. The first words of this phrase are giving the reason for the real soul that's being taken away, i.e. the victim, as the Gemara explains. This opinion reads the pasuk like this. It's saying, matam v'koves koveyam. Why is it that God will take away the soul of the robber? This opinion too agrees that stealing warrants, you know, death penalty from heaven. But the pasuk is explaining why is that a fit punishment? Mishum dekave nafesh, because of the fact that by stealing you take away this person's food, now he's going to starve. So the robber has taken a soul. He's in effect murdered this person, and that's why he is deserving of death. But the bottom line is that the word nafesh in the pasuk refers to the soul of the victim, and therefore this opinion explains the pasuk in Iyov similarly, that yeshel lo kanafsho, and by stealing the person takes away the victim's soul. It's like killing him. The Gemara brings another statement on this theme. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Yochanan said, kol gozel es chavero shava pruta. Anyone who steals from his friend, even as little as a shava pruta, it's ki'ilu notel nishmasum imenu. It's as if he's taken away his life. It's as if he killed him. And the reason is, it could be this small amount. It's the last thing this person has. And therefore you took away his last source of sustenance. He'll starve to death. Therefore, it's like he killed him. Rabbi Yochanan brings his source, Shenemar. Brings the pasuk mentioned above from Mishle. It says, Kein orchas kol botzea botzas nefesh bi'olav yikach. These are the ways of someone who steals. He's taking away the soul of the victim he steals from, V'yomer. And Rabbi Yochanan brings another pasuk, this time from Yirmiyah. The pasuk says, V'ochal kitzircha v'lachmecha. You will eat your harvest and your bread, yoch l'banecho v'nosecha, and consume your sons and your daughters. Meaning, by stealing your stores of food, thus taking away the person's ability to sustain his family, therefore the robber is responsible not only for killing this person, but his family. V'yomer, B'yochanan brings another source from the pasuk in Yoel, which decries the actions of Mitzrayim and Edom, who engaged in the extortion of Klal Yisrael. Pasuk says, Mechamas b'nei Yehuda asher shofchu dam naki be'artzam. This chamas, this extortion, Pasuk describes that as murder. It's like they spill their blood. So again, we see the concept of stealing is tantamount to murder, v'yomer. And yet another source from Shmuel Beis says, El Shol v'el Beis Adamim, because of Shol and the house of blood, al asher hamias es ha-givonim. For Shol, Pasuk says, is responsible for having killed the givonim. But as the Gemara will state, Shol didn't actually, directly have the givonim killed, and yet the pasuk holds him responsible as if he killed them, because he did have the kohanim of Nov massacred, and since the givonim depended on those kohanim for parnasa, and now after massacring the kohanim of Nov, they lost their parnasa, it's considered as if he killed them. So again, we see this idea that they're stealing. The Gemara asks, "My v'omer, why did Rabbi Yochanan need multiple sources for this concept? Seemingly, one would suffice to make the point." The Gemara answers, "And now each new source provides a new point, a new aspect of how far this concept goes. That is, the Gemara says, if we only had the first pasuk from Mishle that describes gzela as like murder, chi tema nefesh didei, you might say, okay, the robber is considered to have murdered the victim himself, Avol Nefesh, Banav Ubinosav Lo, but he's not considered a murderer of the person's children. Therefore, Tashma, Yochanan said, come in here, look at this pasuk in Yirmia that says that actually the Ganav is considered responsible for Bisar Banav Ubinosav, the flesh of the children too, those who died of hunger as a result of stealing the last bit of food that the breadwinner had to feed his family. The Gazan is equally responsible for that. And then Rabbi Yochanan points out further, V'chi tema, perhaps you'll say that, Hani mili heched de lo yoiv deme. All of this, this comparison between stealing and murder is only if somebody did outright geneva, and he just simply stole someone's property. But where a person does extortion, that is, he forcibly takes something but does pay the money, perhaps that case is not included in this comparison to murder. So Rabbi Yochanan therefore said, Tashma, come in here. This pasuk from Yoel, which says, "Mechamas b'nei Yehuda asher shofchu dam naki be'artzam." Pasuk here describes not outright stealing. It says chamas, which means extortion. They pay the money and forcibly take it. Nevertheless, the pasuk describes it as bloodshed. Rabbi Yochanan points out further, "V'chi tema hani mili heched ka'avad b'yadayim." Perhaps this comparison only applies where the ganav stole actively, of a grama lo, but where a person indirectly caused somebody to lose his sustenance, perhaps that's not as severe, that's not called murder. So, Tashma, to address this point, Yochanan brought the pasuk in Shmuel Beis, it says, El Shol Vel Beis Adamim, Al Asherahim Yises HaGivonim. The pasuk says it's considered as if Shol killed the Givonim. Now the problem is, Chiechan Matzinu Shaharik Shol Is HaGivonim. Where in Tanakh does it say that Shaul killed the Givonim? He didn't actually kill the Givonim. Ella, rather, what does it mean? Mitoch Shehorag Nov, Yira Kohanim. Since Shaul did have the Kohanim of Nov massacred, Shehoyim must speak in Lahem Mayim Mazen, and those Kohanim provided the Givonim with sustenance. The Givonim worked for the Kohanim, the different jobs of the Beis Hamikdash, and they got their parnasa that way. And now, because the Kohanim were massacred by Shaul, the Givonim lost that parnasa, therefore, Malal of Akasav Kiilu Hargan, the pasuk considers it as if Shaul actually killed them. Even though Shaul didn't even steal from the Givonim directly, it was indirect. He killed their employers, so that resulted in a loss of parnasa for them. Nevertheless, it's still included in this concept that stealing is tantamount to murder. Our Mishnah mentioned the potential issue of women selling things, the possibility that maybe she is selling stolen things that she stole from her husband. Mishnah said that in general, one does not have to be concerned about that. The assumption is that she is selling those things with her husband's permission or their own things. So the Gemara brings a brisa that elaborates on this. Tan Rabbanan. The Rabbanan Tan a brisa, Lokhin min hanashim klei tzemer bi Yehuda. Just like our Mishnah said, you can purchase woolen things for sale from the women of Yehuda, who commonly produced wool items, uklei pishtan, begalil, or linen things from the women of Galil. Aval, lo yenos ushmanem musalasos. The Raisa says you can't buy wine, oil, or flour from married women selling those things, because typically the husband would want to sell those things. So if we see a married woman selling it, we have to suspect that she stole it from her husband and is selling it. The Raisa also says, velomin huavadim velomina tinokos, nor can one purchase things from slaves or from children. You have to be concerned that they stole it from their master or parent, respectively. So there you have a problem. And the Braisa continues, Abishol Omer. Abishol says, Halacha is Mocheres Isha b'arba v'chamisha dinar. A woman does have rishus to sell 4 or 5 dinars worth of products. K'dei lasos kipa l'rosha, which would be enough to purchase a head covering. So he's saying the husband is okay with selling this amount. You could presume that. You don't have to worry that that amount is stolen. The Braisa mentions, as our Mishnah said, V'kulon sha'amru l'hatmin. Any time the seller mentions to you that, you know, you should hide this thing that you're buying, so that looks fishy, therefore usur. Then it will always be prohibited to make the purchase. It's probably he's telling you to hide it because it's stolen. The Braisa then says, at gabay tzedakah lokhin mehen davar muat. Somebody who's collecting tzedakah is allowed to collect a small donation from a married woman, on the assumption that the husband is okay with, you know, her giving a small donation of their money, of a low davar meruba. But the gabay tzedakah may not take a large donation from a married woman. You have to be concerned that maybe the husband is not okay with this, and therefore it's stealing. Baisa says further, as far as olive pressers, lokhin mehen zaysim bimida v'shemen bimida. One may purchase large amounts of olives or olive oil from the wives of olive pressers, for presumably she wouldn't risk stealing large amounts from her husband. So apparently he gave her permission to sell this of a lo zaysim bimuat v'shemen bimuat. But he can't purchase small amounts from her, because perhaps he didn't give her permission, and therefore it's stolen. The Braisa brings it, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. Shimon Gamliel said, Lokhim inashim zesim, they change it to bimuat, begalil ha'elyon. In galil ha'elyon, where there's a very high premium placed on oil, and so a person would be makbid, but even a very small amount of oil. Therefore, you could purchase even small amounts from the wives of olive pressers in galil ha'elyon. But she wouldn't risk, you know, stealing, you know, precious oil. The husband would, at some point, you know, notice that. So why is she selling it? Typically, the olive presser himself would sell it. So Shmuel says, "Shepamim anabosh limcha pesach beso minosin leishto mocheres." Sometimes a person might be embarrassed to sell it himself, so he'll have his wife do it. So in other words, the fact that she's selling it is not necessarily a sign that it's stolen, and therefore, since in Galilion they're makbid about even a small amount of oil, the assumption is that she's selling it with permission, so it's fine. The Gemara relates, Ravina ikla lebe mechoza. Ravina once came to mechoza to collect some tzedakah. And also nashe lebe mechoza, the wives of households of lebe mechoza, romu kamei chavle v'sheire. The campaign started with great success. His wives placed golden chains and bracelets in front of him as donations, kabel minayu, and he accepted them. Amalei rabbe tosvola Ravina, rabbe tosvola est Ravina, but I v'otanya. Aye, doesn't the Braisa say, Gabay tzedakah mekablin mein davar muat of a low davar meruba? You're not allowed to accept a large donation from a married woman for fear that the husband gave no permission, so it's stolen. So how are you allowed to accept this gold from the wives of a mechoza? Amalei Ravina answered, Hani lebenei mechoza davar muat nenu. This gold for the people of Bnei Mechoza, who are very wealthy, is considered davar muat. For them, it's considered a small donation, so it's not a problem at all. I was therefore allowed to accept them as a donation. The last mission of the Masechta deals with the question of different tradesmen who, when working on something for his client, the work produces, you know, extra leftover material, and the question is, who keeps that? Does the worker keep it, or does it go to the balabayas, to the client? So the Mishnah says, mochin shakoves motzi, shreds of wool that are typical to come off a woolen garment the launderer is working on, harielu shalom. Since these little shreds are, you know, very minimal, it's a very small amount, therefore the launderer can keep them. The assumption is that most people are not makbid to demand those things, so therefore the halacha always is that the launderer could keep that. The asorek, regarding a teaseler, so this is somebody working on a cloth that's too hard. Let's say it's still being produced, or it was just laundered, so it's shrunk and it's hard. So you have a person who would take a special teasel comb or brush, which had, like, you know, sharp, you know, spikes on it, and he would run it across the garment, thus raising the nap. Basically, it would trim, like, the outer surface of the garment, which serves to soften the garment. And this process also affects the appearance of the garment, depending on, you know, how the teaseler does it, which direction he goes. So this process of teaseling is going to result in some, you know, fibers, extra material that was shorn off the garment. So the Mishnah says, "Vasorek motzi areelu shel balabais." Since in this case we're talking about a significant amount of fibers from the cloth, therefore there's no assumption that, you know, most people are mochel on that. No, the balabais, if he wants, can demand that back. Now, it was standard then for weavers, when producing a garment, to add an extra 3 threads of material to the edge of the garment. It wasn't part of the actual garment. They added these additional 3 threads. And it was common for the launderer, when working on the garment, to remove those threads. The Mishnah says, Koves nota shlosha chutin vehein shalo. The launderer removes these 3 threads, and they belong to him, he can keep them. For in general, an owner is fine with that, so that's the halacha. He's allowed to keep them. But yeser mikain, if he took more than this, hareilu shavalabais, then he can't keep any of it. If you're talking about more than 3 threads, all of that goes to the balabais. The Mishnah adds, though, im ha'yishachor al-gabi alavon, if the extra threads were totally incongruous with the beged, was, let's say, white, and the threads were black, so they clearly didn't belong in the beged, notin l'sakol v'in shalom. Then clearly it's extra, it's not desired for the beged, so the koves can keep all of that. The Mishnah continues, achayet, for tailor, shir, sachut, kedelit for bow. If he has some extra thread left over, as long as that's enough to sew with, Gemara will define that more. Or if he has some leftover material that's matlash, yishalash, yishalash, it's a cloth that's at least 3x3 tvachim, is large enough to be used for a patch, then a re'elu shabalabayas. This amount of leftover material is considered significant, and therefore it goes to the balabayas. The Mishnah then talks about a carpenter. It says, Masha chorosh motzi b'matzad, the extra shavings that are left over once the carpenter worked on something with his adz, a re'elu shalom. Shavings are not significant, therefore the carpenter could keep those. But a bakashil, if the carpenter was working with a hatchet, and therefore the extra pieces will be significant, therefore shall balabais. Does have to go back to the balabais. However, the Mishnah says, Vimayosa eats a balabais, if this was not a contractor, where, you know, you had this person produce some woodwork in his store, but rather, this was like a day worker who came to the balabais' home to do the job, then the lachizaf and nesores, changed to nesores, shall balabais. Then even the sawdust belongs to the owner. In this case, if it's a day worker, you know, working on his premises, that everything that goes on the floor, even if it's a little bit of sawdust, the balabais keeps that for himself. It's understood in this kind of case that the assumption is that the balabais keeps everything. The Gemara begins with a brisa, talks about the halachas mentioned in our Mishnah, Tan Rabbanan. The Rabbanan taught in a brisa. The halacha is, Lokhin mochin mina koveis mipnei shein shalom. One is allowed to purchase little shreds of wool from a launderer because those are not stolen. For as our Mishnah taught us, they belong to him. He's allowed to keep those shreds. He's allowed to buy them from him. Price states further, Akoves notel shnei chutin al yonim v'hein shalom. Price mentions the launderer is allowed to keep 2 threads that he removes from the beged. In the laundering process, these are those extra threads that we mentioned. Of course, the Brisa seems to contradict our Mishnah, which said he can keep 3 threads. The Brisa says only 2, so the Gemara will address that problem. Turning to Amid Beis, the Braitza continues, Velo yatil bo yoser mishlosha chubin. When placing the washed garment on a kind of frame to stretch out the garment, because the garment shrunk in the laundering process, so it would afterwards be stretched. How would they stretch it? They would put some loops on different points of the garment and then tie a string connecting the loop to this frame, which would stretch out the garment nice and taut. So the Braisa says that the launderer may not attach these loops to the garment with more than 3 stitches. And the reason is that we don't want him to stretch the garment too much. For as we'll see, after the garment had been stretched, it would need to be cut to even it out. It's going to be more stretched at certain points, so it needed to be cut to make each edge even. And as we'll see, the launderer was allowed to keep the portions that he cut to make the garment even. Therefore, the Braisa is saying that he has to ensure that he doesn't stretch it excessively. Therefore, don't make the loops too tight. Don't do more than 3 stitches, so it won't be stretched too much. Further, the Braisa says, "Velo yisro kabegi l'shesio ala li'arvo." When teaseling the garment, the process we mentioned in the Mishnah of combing it with this sharp comb that softened the beged, should not do that along the warp threads, the vertical threads, rather along the weft threads, the horizontal threads. For if you would teasel along the warp threads, that would remove too much fiber. You'd be taking away too much from the beged. So you must do it along the horizontal, the weft threads. Then the Braisa says, "Umashveyo le'archo." As we mentioned earlier, after stretching the garment, the launderer evens out each edge. He cuts along the stretched edges of the garment. He should do so along the length of it of a lo l'rachbo, but not its width. That is, he must stretch the beged, attach those loops to the length sides of it, and stretch out those sides, not the width sides. So he's going to ultimately even out the length sides to make those look nice. Raisa says, "Vimbolash voso ad tefach reshai." After the stretching process, he has to cut off up to a tefach's amount of cloth. That's fine. That's still a reasonable amount. And he is allowed to keep whatever he cuts off for himself. So Rana points out the problem. Amar Ma, the Braisa had said, Shnei chutin, that the launderer can keep the 2 excess threads that were added to the garment by the weaver. He removes those and he can keep those. But I have Yonan Tanan Shalash. I, our Mishnah, mentioned 3 threads. So it seems to be a contradiction. The Gemara answers, Lokash, it's not a problem. For Ha, the Braisa refers to Balimi, thick threads, V'habiktini. Our Mishnah permits the launderer to keep up to 3 thin threads. The Braisa mentioned, V'lo yisra kabegi l'shesu l'arvo. When teaseling the garment, you do so along the warp threads, not the weft. The Gemara asks, "Vatanya ipcha?" There's a Braisa that says just the opposite, that he specifically teasels along the warp. The Gemara answers, "Lokash, it's not a problem." For Ha, the first Braisa was referring to what type of garment? Beglima, a typical garment that's worn every day, and therefore it's more important that the beged last longer. So don't do it along the warp; it's going to weaken the beged. It won't last as long. Ha b'sarv. The second Braisa is talking about a cloak, meaning that's worn on a special occasion, and by this kind of garment, it's more important that it look distinguished, and you'll get a richer look by teaseling along the warp, even though it's going to end up removing more fiber. But that's what people want when it comes to the sarbala kind of garment. And therefore, that's the appropriate method that the teaseler should employ. The Braisa mentioned, "Velo yatil bo yoser mishlosha chubin." When attaching the loops to the garment in order to set it on the frame to stretch it, you shouldn't reinforce the loop too much. You shouldn't do more than 3 stitches, so that it's not excessively stretched. The Gemara asks, "Bayir b'Yirmiyah." Yirmiyah asked, "What exactly does the Braisa mean when it says 3 stitches? What's considered a stitch? We know that the weaver passes the needle through the cloth and then brings it back to him and repeats the process. So what does the Braisa mean by a stitch here? Does it mean imptuye vesuye chad? Perhaps the passing the needle and then bringing it back is all considered one stitch. O dilma imptuye vesuye tre. Maybe each motion, go forward then back, maybe that's already considered 2 stitches, which would of course halve the amount that he may pass the needle and through the loop attaching it to the garment. Gemara says, take it, let it stand. We don't know the answer to this question. The Braisa mentioned the mashveh l'orcho v'lo l'rachvo. When stretching the garment, you attach the loops along the length, not the width. Mar asks, "Ay v'atanya ipcha." Another braisa says just the opposite. You specifically have the garment stretched on the width sides. The Gemara answers, Lokash, it's not a problem. For Ha, Beglima. The first braisa that says you do it by the length is talking about a regular garment, a cloak, or any other typical garment, where the length of that garment will be clearly visible. So you want to stretch the length and cut that nice and even, make that part look nice. Whereas Ha, Bim, Yonit. Braisa number two is talking about a cloth belt. And the way that was worn was such that you don't see the length of it. You just see the width ends of the belt that hang down in front. Therefore, you don't stretch it by the length, you stretch it by the width, and you cut down those ends, make those nice, for those are the parts that will be visible. That's what braisa number two is saying. The Mishnah said that the fibers of the garment that the tzitzler removes go back to the balabais. You can't keep those. So Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanan taught nei braisa, ein lochim min asorek mochin. You can't purchase shreds of wool from a tzitzler, mipnei she'ena shalom, because presumably they don't belong to him, they're stolen, so you can't buy those. But if a makom shenog aliyah shalokhin, but if the custom in this place is that the tzitzler can keep that, then since it's not stolen, you can purchase that from him. The braisa continues, b'chol makom lokhin mim kar mali mochin. In any place, even where the minig is that this extra fiber goes back to the balabayas, so you do have to worry that it's stolen. But if you're talking about a pillow filled up with these shreds, or v'cheses, meleya mochen, or a mattress filled up with these little parts that the tzitzler ended up with, then you're allowed to buy it. The Gemara explains, my taima. It's the reason why you're allowed to buy it. I thought we just said you can't buy the little pieces because you have to assume they're stolen. The Gemara explains, because kenanu b'shinoi, even if they were stolen, by turning them into a pillow or a mattress, the tzitzler has acquired them. It's a shinoi maisa, changed the thing itself, so that now they really belong to the tzitzler, so not a problem to buy them from him. The Gemara brings a braisa that talks about things you may or may not purchase from a weaver. Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanan taught in a braisa, ein lochin migardi, one may not purchase from a weaver, lo irin, not the woolen stoppers, velo nirin, nor the heddles, velo punkalin, nor tapestry bobbins, v'lushirei pikios, leftover spools of thread. For all these things is the possibility that they're stolen. Stole it from previous customers. Aval, however, the Braisa says, lochin mehen beged menumar. One is allowed to purchase a beged menumar, it's a garment that has spots on it, meaning of different colors. The point here is, even though these little spots indicate that he took little pieces, perhaps from customers, and was stolen, and put in the garment, still you're allowed to buy this from him. And that is because, even if it was stolen, it was produced into a baguette, so that's a shinoi maisa, and therefore he was a kona them, and you could buy it. The braisa also mentions that you could purchase arev shesi, weft or warp thread from a weaver. Again, even if it's spotted, which indicates that maybe you put, you know, stolen little pieces in there to form the thread, not a problem, because he used the pieces to spin into this thread. And so that's a shinoi maisa. And as well, it's not a problem to purchase tavoi ve'orig, spun threads. And even if it might have been from, let's say, those little woolen stoppers that we mentioned earlier are a problem, but if it's been spun into a thread or woven into a cloth, then not a problem, because it went through a shinoi maisa, it physically changed, and therefore it's no longer the property of the nigzal, so you may purchase them. The Gemara wonders, Amri, they asked, Hashta tavoi shakli, now that the braisa has taught us that even the spun string, even just, you know, spinning the pieces into a string, that it's not a problem to purchase that, because even if the pieces were stolen, the fact they were spun into a thread is a significant enough change to be considered a shinoi maisa. Oruk mi boy, does the braisa need to teach us that the halacha is that if the material not only was spun, but it was also actually woven into a garment, that that's a shinoi maisa? Obviously it's a shinoi maisa. We've already spun it, and that itself already made a shinoi maisa. So the braisa's point here seems totally superfluous. The Gemara answers, Mayarig, what's this case of the woven cloth? It's referring to tike, these woolen chains that you go right from the material to the weaving step. There is no spinning step when making these woolen chains. So therefore the braisa is adding a new point. The braisa is saying, besides the halacha that if it's spun, it's considered a shinoi maisa, if unspun wool was woven into these woolen chains, that itself also would be considered a shinoi maisa. It's a kinyan, so no problem to purchase that from this weaver. Gemara brings a brayso that talks about things you may or may not purchase from a dyer. Tan Rabbanan, they're born a Tanei brayso. Ein lochim min hatsaba. You may not purchase the following things from a dyer. Lo osos, you can't purchase a piece of cloth that was used for testing, meaning people brought in their cloth to be dyed and to show them what the color would look like. He cut off a piece of the garment and dyed it for them. Really, he's supposed to give that back to them. It's theirs. So if he kept it, it's stealing. So you can't buy that from him. It's stolen property. Velo dugmos, can't buy samples from him. Meaning these are pieces that maybe customers brought in to show the dyer what color they wanted for another beggar. So that's their property. If they forgot it there and he kept it, it's stolen property. You can't buy it from him. Velo tlushim shel tzemer, not torn off pieces of wool. For we suspect maybe he tore it off some material that was brought to him and stole it. So these are all the problem. Avalokhin mehen beget savua. You're allowed to purchase an entire dyed garment. Presumably he wouldn't risk stealing that amount from one of his customers. As well, you're allowed to purchase tavoy, spun threads, even if it was from those osos or dugmos we mentioned above, the sample pieces that are possibly stolen. Once it's spun into a thread, it's fine. We begot him as well as garments that were woven from, you know, possibly osos or dugmos, not a problem. The reason is because here it's a shino, even if it was stolen, it went through a change, physical change, so it's a kinyan, and now is the property of this dyer, so you could purchase that. So just like in the earlier brayso, the Gemara asks, hashta tavoy shakil, brayso already said that once he spins these materials into a thread, that it's fine, begadim boy. So what's the point of mentioning that if he took the further step of weaving the spun thread into a garment, that's fine? Of course, that's also fine. The Gemara answers, my begadim. What are these begadim? The case is namti. They're felt garments where the point is there is no step of spinning the thread. You just press the material. So meaning the Brice is saying that if the material was either spun into a thread or pressed into a felt garment, there it's not a problem because even if it was stolen, you have a shinoi maisis, it's a kinyan, so you're allowed to purchase it in that case. The Gemara brings another Brice, ton rabbanon rabbanon tarnei Brice. Ano sein oros la'abdon. Somebody gave hides to a tanner. So you should produce some leather thing. The halacha is hakitsuin v'tlushin, both the trimmings of the hide, like that he cut off the edges, and tlushin, torn off wool. Harayelu shabal abayis. The tanner can't keep that. Significant, that has to go back to the owner. Further, the brisa says, v'ya'ola, they change it to mishetef hamayim, the little amount of wool that comes from the process of rinsing the hide, harayelu shalom. That's already a small amount, so the tanner can keep that. Again, our Mishnah discussed that the launder is allowed to keep those three extra threads added by the weaver. The launder typically removes those to make the garment look nicer. He may keep those threads. Amar of Yehuda comments, Katsara Shemei, Katsara is his name. In Aramaic, a launder is called Katsara, but Katsara Shakale. And Katsara, which also could mean like to shorten, he takes for himself, as our Mishnah taught us. So if Yehuda points out the connection between the Katsara's name and the amount that he shortens, and the Mishnah says he keeps for himself. The Gemara now discusses these three extra threads that, again, typically are ultimately removing by the launderer with regards to the question of where to place the tzitzis on a four-cornered garment. It requires tzitzis strings. On the corners, the Gemara Menachas tells us that you have to fix the strings a little bit distance from the edge. It's got to be the distance from the upper thumb knuckle, like the middle thumb joint, till the end of the thumbnail. That's the minimum distance that the strings have to be placed on the beged from the edge of the beged. So the question is, do we include these extra three threads in that measurement? Amar of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said, "A kol olam leminyan tcheles." Indeed, as long as those threads are present, those would be included in the measurement. It will contribute towards the necessary amount. You have to distance where you place the strings away from the edge of the beged. Rav Yehuda says, "V'yitzchok b'ri kapit alayu." My son Yitzchok was stringent about this, not to include those threads because ultimately they're going to be removed. So he took a stringent approach. The Mishnah mentioned that if a tailor has leftover material, there was enough thread to sew with, then that goes back to the owner. So the question is, what exactly does that mean? V'kam litfor. What does that mean, enough to sew with? How long is that? Ravasi explains, melo machat v'chutz l'machat. It means a needle's length of thread and also an amount beyond that. It can't mean an exact needle's length because you wouldn't be able to bring the needle back after passing the thread through the garment if it was exactly one needle's length. So we're talking about thread that has some additional length beyond that. So the Gemara wants to know how much. Yibaylo, they asked. Does Rav Asi mean? It could be it means melomachet v'chutz lemachet kimelomachet. Maybe this additional amount is another full needle's length. O dilma melomachet v'chutz lemachet mashu. Maybe it means just a little bit beyond an actual needle's length to enable the person to come back with the needle. So which way did Rav Asi mean? The Gemara resolves the question from the Braisa. Tashma come in here. The Tanya it says in the Braisa. Chayit shashir asachut pachos mikidei litvar bo. If the amount of thread the tailor left over was less than the amount you could sew with, or matleshi pchusa mishalosh al shalosh, there was some leftover cloth less than 3x3 tefachim, and halachis bisman shebalabayis makbid alein. If the balabayis is specifically makbid about even this minimal amount, or elish balabayis, he could demand it back. In balabayis makbid alein, if he didn't specifically express that he's makbid, then the tailor can keep this additional amount. It's too small, in general, for anyone to be makbid about. So the Gemara points out, Yamar Bishlama Milomachat V'chutz Lamachat Kimilomachat. It makes sense if Rav Asi meant the first way, the amount that the tailor cannot keep it has to go back to the owner, means a needle's length plus another full needle's length, then we could understand this braisa, how it could be that a Baal HaBayis would be makbid about an amount even less than this, or even if it's less than two needle's lengths. You could still use that amount of thread to stitch one of those loops that we mentioned above when going through the process of stretching the garment. The Gemara says, if the minimal amount where the owner always could demand that back, if Rav Asi meant that amount is a needle's length plus just a little bit beyond that, then the Bryce's case of less than that, and the Bryce says it's still possible he might be makbid, it doesn't make sense. What purpose at all would an amount that's less than a needle's length and a little bit be useful for? You can't use that for anything. You can't even bring the needle back once. So therefore, the Gemara says, Elish, Ma'amina, we learn from the Braisa, Melomach v'chutz lemachik melomachik, must be Rav Asi meant that the minimal amount that the owner could always demand is two full needle's lengths. The Braisa says, if it's less than that, then he can only take it back if he specifically wants it back. Sh'ma'amina. Indeed, that's a valid inference. Clearly, that's what Rav Asi must have meant. Our Mishnah then discussed the carpenter, different shavings, pieces that he may or may not keep for himself. And our Mishnah said that the shavings that come off of the carpenter's work, if he's working with the matzah, with an adz, those he can keep, those are not significant enough for people to be makbid about. So he could keep those. But the Gemara asks, Rimini, contrast our Mishnah with the following braisa that says, but the shavings that come off the carpenter's work with the adz, and those pieces that come off the wood, if he's working with a saw, it has to go back to the owner. So that's not like our Mishnah. That's going to be the problem. Let's finish the Braisa. First, the Braisa continues, Yotze mitachas makdeach, sawdust that falls if the carpenter was working with a drill, mitachas ritani, the shavings that come off if he's working with a plane, v'nigra b'megera, or sawdust that falls down if he's working with a saw, harielu shelo, that's too small to be significant, so the carpenter can keep that. But again, the problem is, our Mishnah said, the carpenter may keep even the shavings that come off while using the matzad. The Braisa says, those have to go back to the owner. So it seems to be a contradiction. Gemara answers, I'm a Rav. Rav answers, there's no contradiction here, for Be'aster the Tanadi Dun, the place in which our Mishnah was written, Ika Tarti Chetzine, the two different kind of carpenter's tools. The Rabasi Kari Le Kashiel, in Tan of our Mishnah's place, they call the larger tool a Kashiel, Luzutrasi Kari Le Matzah, the smaller carpenter tool. In our Mishnah's place, they refer to that as Matzah. And our Mishnah says that smaller tool, the shavings that produces, are too small to be significant, so the carpenter can keep them. Whereas, Be'aster the Tanabara, the place in which the Braisa was written, the language does not distinguish between these two tools. And Chadu de Ika, there's one tool, Vakarle Matzah, which is referred to as adz. And when the Braisa uses that term, it's describing a much larger tool than the tool that our Mishnah describes. Therefore, it produces larger shavings. And therefore, the Braisa says, those go back to the owner. Gemara brings another Braisa, Tan Rabbanan, Rabbanatan, Braisa, Satisei Avanim, those who chisel stones, Ein Ba Mishum Gezel. There is no gezel problem regarding the pieces that fall down as they're doing their work. They can keep those. The owners are not makbid about them. Further, mefaski ilanos, those who prune trees, or mefaski gifanim, or grapevines, or menakve higi, those who cut down thorn bushes, or menakshe zraim, those who come and get rid of unwanted vegetation growing in someone's grains, odre yirakos, workers who come and remove unwanted vegetables in a vegetable garden, you know, causing a problem for the growth, so they remove the excess ones. The halacha is that in general, they can keep those. Bizman shebalabayis makbid aleim, the balabayis is specifically makbid, then yesh b'mishum gezel, then it would be gezel to take it. But in balabayis makbid aleim, if the balabayis is not specifically makbid about them, or elu shalom, then worker would be allowed to keep these things. And the Masechta concludes with Amar of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said, Shus v'chazis, hops and green grains. We're talking about presumably where they're never going to develop into a usable crop. Ein ba mishum gezel. Therefore, it's not gezel for somebody to take these things. The assumption is the owner has no need for them. He doesn't care for them. So it's not gezel to take them. But you have to be aware of the local custom. In this place, owners are makbid, then it would be gezel to take them. Amar Ravina. Ravina comments that umasa mechasya asher the kaptiu. Ravina informs us that the city Masa Mechasya is a place where owners are makbid about these greens and things, even though they'll never be fit for human consumption. But the people of Masa Mechasya, who required a lot of good pastures for their animals, they therefore are makbid, and it would be gazel to take these things without permission. This then concludes the 10th parak of Baba Kama. Hadron Allah HaGozel Basra. This concludes Masechtes Baba Kama. Hadron Allah Masechtes Baba Kama. Mazel Tov. Mazel tov, 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 mazel tov